Will Wade meeting with LSU officials and the NCAA. What's going on behind closed doors? LSU baseball on the road in Missouri. We'll get a preview live from Columbia. And they are shooting at the sticks at Augusta with Francesco Molinari at the top of the leaderboard. We'll tell you what Tiger's doing and who else is making a move today, Friday, April 12th, 2019.
Three on, one out, ninth inning, 6-6 the pitch. Devers swings, bouncing ball, and it's in the right field, the base hit, and the Red Sox walk it off. Nunez scores the winning run as the Red Sox rally for two in the ninth to beat Toronto 7-6, their first walk-off win of the season.
Tied with Hunter Renfroe for the most hits so far on the road trip, was 5 for 11 in San Francisco. And he hits this one out to deep left field. Peralta's going back. It is up and out. A home run for Manuel Margot. His first of the year. And he continues to swing a great bat on the trip. This home run puts the Padres back in front, 7-6 here in the eighth.
I'm trying to, you know, carry my weight here in the Cubs' brew.
Here's a drive into right center field toward the gap. That's going to be a base hit. Descalso's going to score. The ball goes all the way to the wall. Garattini pulls in at second with an RBI double. Cubs lead 2-0.
Oh, happy Friday to you and yours. How are you? My main man, CD, taking care of business, putting all that montage together from another night of Major League Baseball as we are live and in living color from the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media and the studios of 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com. Happy Friday, boys and girls, and round two of the Masters is underway, and Francesco Molinari, currently 5 under par for the day, leading by a single stroke. He is 7 under par for the tournament. Jason Day and Dustin Johnson just both birdied 15, and they are at 6 under par. Ian Poulter, Phil Mickelson, and Brooks Koepka, along with John Rahm, are 5 under par. Bryson DeChambeau, the first-round leader, is +2 today. He's at -4 for the tournament. And Tiger Woods just birdied number 4, so he is at 3 under par, 4 shots off the lead, with lots of golf left to play. So, and Tiger is in the bunker at number 5, the par 4, fifth hole. Let's see if he can get it out and get it going. Meanwhile, no word yet. There's no white smoke coming out of some fireplace wherever LSU and the NCAA and Will Wade are meeting. Maybe we'll know something later on. I'm sure it's a meeting that will take a long, long time as they chart a course and plot a plan. Meanwhile, 5 LSU players have declared for the NBA draft. First it was Nasri, then it was Tremont Waters, then it was Skylar Mays, then it was Javonte Smart, then it was Emmett Williams. Darius Days came out and said, I am returning for my sophomore season. So one player's back, Marlon Taylor. No, he hasn't said anything, so he'll be back for one more year. And then after that, your guess is as good as mine. So no word on that front. So stay tuned. Stay tuned. Wilson Alexander will join us live from Columbia, Missouri this morning, this afternoon, excuse me. LSU taking on another the team with the best ERA in the Southeastern Conference. More left-handers facing LSU. They've had a trend where they lose a midweek game, but they come back and win an SEC series. Well, they lost this week to Southern. Here's another opportunity as they're tied for the lead in the SEC West. And just one game behind Georgia for the overall lead in the Southeastern Conference. So we'll do that one. be dodging some rain bullets in Acadiana as the Raging Cajuns and Tony Robichaux take on South Alabama. And as you heard Clint say, unfortunately, the spring game is going to have to be moved indoors. So that limits your opportunity to view them. But what do you do? You want to keep everybody healthy. You certainly don't want to play in the inclement weather in any way, shape, or form. So those are just some of the things going on. So Wilson Alexander will be joining us. We'll have our Hot Topics segment. George Becknell and the Three Amigos are back together again. We'll talk about the NBA playoffs a little bit. Mike Dettillier will talk about LSU spring football. We'll talk about the NFL draft today as well. So, a busy, busy day, and, you know, I got to be honest, a little selfish here, but me personally, I wouldn't mind if it rained this weekend. I love a sunshiny weekend. I really do. This is one weekend I wouldn't mind that it would rain because I want to watch the Masters, and I want to watch the NBA playoffs, and I want to watch GOT, baby, Game of Thrones. And I want to watch Billions on Sunday night. Those are my go-to shows. That's what I want. But for your sake, if you have some outside activities, I hope it's a nice day so you can go and make all of those. Phil Mickelson just dropped one on the green. So they're shooting at the flagsticks. They're expecting some rain later on today at Augusta. So they're trying to get all this in. But so far, it looks pretty darn good. And Tiger Woods is 76 yards away from the hole on his third shot on a par four, number five. So he's got to get up there really, really close. Brings it back a little bit. Oh, he's going to have a tough, tough putt to save par on this one. So erratic it is, to say the very, very least. Meanwhile, three former LSU basketball Tigers will take part in the NBA playoffs, which get underway with four games on Saturday. Ben Simmons with the Philadelphia 76ers, averaged 17 points a game, nearly 9 rebounds and 8 assists, averaging 34 minutes a game with a field goal percentage of 56%. Jarrell Martin and his new team this season, the Orlando Magic, will be opening on the road at Toronto. Martin's played in 42 games, didn't average many points, got 7 minutes a game. This is his third playoff appearance. He is having appeared in 5 combined games with the Memphis Grizzlies in 2016 and 2017. And then LSU's active veteran NBA player, Garrett Temple, is playing with his second team this year, and his L.A. Clippers will open the playoffs Saturday night against the defending champs, the Golden State Warriors. Temple's been quite a success story in his 9th NBA season, averaging nearly 20 minutes a game, 5 points a game, 2.5 rebounds, 2 assists. Pretty darn good. He's only played 26 games with the Clippers, got traded at the trade deadline, and now he's in the playoffs. So good luck to all three of them. All right. We are brought to you by Hooters. A tax relief is in store for you and yours starting today. Bring your children with you, 12 and under. You spend $15 at Hooters, and Hooters is going to buy the kids a kids' meal on them. It's a tax relief day at Hooters, right there on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. It is new. It is renovated. It is neat and pristine. And you've got the Hooters girls. You've got the Hooters wings. You've got everything else on the menu. And you've got televisions everywhere. So you can watch anything that's out there in the world of sports. Hooters will have it on. So have yourself a good time. Go be happy. Go to Hooters. We'll go live to Columbia, Missouri. LSU, Missouri baseball preview next.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. Jason Day just birdied 16. Francisco Molinari is in the clubhouse. There's a tie for the lead at 7 under par between those two as we speak. Well, Let's go up to Columbia, Missouri. LSU will start off a three-game set, weather permitting, that begins tonight at 6:30. Pre-game show here on 103.7 The Game at 6. First pitch at 6:30. Wilson Alexander, our good friend from the Baton Rouge Advocate, is in Columbia and joins us now. Good afternoon, Wilson. How are you, my friend?
I am phenomenal. How are y'all?
Awesome. Awesome. Question number one, how's the weather in Columbia?
Well, that's part of the reason I'm phenomenal, because right now it is perfect. Sitting on the quad in the main part of campus, and it's just gorgeous. Not a cloud in the sky. It's cold, you know, a little bit, kind of windy. It's going to not be as pleasant when the sun goes down, but right now you can't beat it.
All right, so LSU comes in 8-4 in the SEC. Missouri's 5-6-1, but they're 14-2 at home. They got a great pitching staff, don't they? The best ERA in the league.
Yeah, they do. It's interesting because, like, despite that pitching staff, they're 5-6-1. Just because the rest of the team doesn't quite meet that pitching staff, the level of it, but. That pitching's going to be, you know, a tough challenge for LSU this weekend, because the pitching's all left-handed, at least the first two. We're waiting on who the third starter will be. But, the Saturday guys got the second lowest ERA in the conference.
Huh. Yeah, TJ Sikema or Sikema, whatever. It'll be Jacob Cantleberry tonight. He's only at a 2.62 ERA, going against Zach Hess with a 3.71. That puts some pressure on the top of the lineup, doesn't it?
Yes, it definitely does. Paul Maneri and I were talking about this yesterday, just the fact that their offense right now is just so inconsistent. I mean, it has been all year. Though they scored 9 runs against A&M, last Saturday in the second game of the doubleheader, and then they scored 2 against Southern. And Paul said the problem is that they're reliant so much on the top of the lineup, because they just aren't getting production from the last, you know, 3 or 4 guys there. They're going to get Daniel Cabrera back, which should help, but they're still just, game to game, they're either exploding or they're imploding. It's not really a middle ground.
That's very, very well put. I'm surprised. He just hit off a tee on Wednesday, so apparently he is good to go. I wonder, with the cold weather, if that doesn't come into play here with the wrist.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't ask Paul about that. I was at practice last night once they got here to Missouri, and I watched Daniel hit. He hit live pitching. Clay Moffitt threw against him at the very end of practice in sort of, you know, a little session, and Daniel hit well. I don't know how much the cold will play into it. If that will make his wrist stiffen up, that might affect, you know, his status for the rest of the weekend, but Paul said he should be ready to go for tonight.
Wilson Alexander, the Baton Rouge Advocate, you said the weather, it's supposed to turn bad on Saturday. Have you heard about any contingency plans if that does in fact happen?
No, I haven't. That's something I would ask Paul about probably before the game tonight, just wondering if they're keeping an eye on that.
Okay.
It looks like they should be fine for tonight and tomorrow. Then again, the weather is unpredictable, particularly in this part of the country. So I'll have more on that probably, you know, later on.
All right. Missouri, of course, one of the finer broadcasting journalism schools in America. Look, Missouri's in third place in the SEC East. Great pitching, but they're 12th in the SEC in team batting. So I got to believe that Hess and company are chomping at the bit for this one.
I don't know about chomping at the at the bit, but it's a favorable matchup for sure. Missouri, like we sort of touched on earlier, it's at 23-11 this year overall because of the strength of its pitching staff, but its hitters and its fielders just aren't coming through, rounding out that team. It's going to be interesting to see if kind of this weather plays into effect a little bit. Like last night, the wind was just gusting out. And so they're playing, you know, this little version of three-man ball. And TJ Willis hit one off the roof of the training facility behind the right field wall. I don't know how far that would have gone, because it just caught the wind and just flew out. So that's going to be something that LSU's pitchers are going to have to kind of be aware of is if that ball gets in the air and the wind's blowing out, it's just going to just keep carrying out of the ballpark.
Do you feel more comfortable with LSU's batting? I mean, they faced a bunch of left. They faced two left-handers last weekend. They ought to be used to this by now, I would think.
Yeah, and they've said that they are used to it. That it's not really something, you know, at the beginning of the year, Paul started Cade Belosa at first base just to see if he could hit left-handed pitching because he had no idea because he had never faced it in any of the scrimmages at LSU because they don't have a left-handed pitcher on the staff.
Right, right.
But at this point, they've faced 13 left-handed starters and they're 10-3 in those games. I think they're kind of used to it by now, but they just need to get consistent against anybody who they're playing.
Wilson Alexander, the Advocate. Any changes to the lineup? I'm always curious. Where's Duplantis going to hit? First, second, third, fourth? Where are they going to put him tonight?
Well, I'm not sure yet. Paul won't really reveal that until, you know, about an hour and a half or so before the game.
I got you. This series will represent the halfway mark of the SEC schedule. How do you feel about this baseball team now as compared to 3 weeks ago, let's say?
I think that they feel better about themselves than they did then. It's kind of weird because you're coming off that loss to Southern, so there's sort of this twinge of, you know, disappointment wrapped up in that game. But you have to look, you know, when this team was at Texas, I mean, it was just a train wreck, really, that whole series.
They
come back, and they, like, ever since SEC play started, the pitching staff has just been phenomenal. And the hitters are, you know, you're kind of getting a mixed bag, but like you said, they're tied for first place in the SEC West, which is probably the toughest division in college baseball. And they're playing really well during SEC games, which are what matters more. That's the thing with the Southern loss. The other two times LSU's lost a midweek game this year, they've come back and won the next weekend series. And so that's what they're going to try to do this weekend, too.
You bring any chocolate chip cookies with you up to Missouri? Because I hear that Maneri loves yours. Is that the truth?
I mean, he did pick mine over, you know, Hillary Shinuck, our photographer's cookies, in that little competition. But I did not bring any with me, unfortunately. I wish I could have one right now.
All right, well,
that was a lot of fun that day.
Yeah, I hope they keep winning on these road trips in the league. If not, it's your fault. What kind of a ballpark
is me, man?
I know, I'm just kidding you. What kind of ballpark does Missouri have? Do they have a baseball following of a nice crowd of fans normally?
So I was talking to a friend of mine who goes to school here, and he said that it's not one of the nicer parks in the SEC, and I can kind of attest to that. Like, the stands are much smaller than what you'd get at Alex Box Stadium. I don't know the capacity off the top of my head. The infield is entirely turfed. Probably because of the weather you get here. You can't really play on dirt until probably around this time. So they would miss a lot of the year. The field's a little bit smaller than Alex Box. I mean, not even 400 at this point. I think about 399. It's an interesting little stadium. It's small. Feels sort of cramped. And that turf gave LSU issues at Texas. So that'll be something
sure
to keep an eye on this weekend.
Sure did. Well done. Wilson Alexander of the Advocate. LSU came out and some players, I've never heard this before about those midweek games are tough. It's not the same crowd. People don't come out and show up for them, and it's hard for them, and they like going up against SEC teams. I understand that. I've never actually heard them in all my years come out and say that.
Interesting. I mean, obviously I've only covered the team for a little bit, but that's what I've heard, you know, it's just that Paul, during some of these midweek games, has come back, you know, sort of reflecting on them after the fact and said, you know, I was worried about our energy. And I guess that's what these players are talking about, too, is that it's kind of hard to get up for them when it isn't, there's not a lot of stakes. So they definitely, it's not going to ruin their season, but they need to kind of figure it out.
If the season ended today, right now, who would your MVP be?
For LSU?
Uh-huh.
Well, obviously, that's what we're talking about. That's a good question. When I did a halfway of the year, sort of wrap up,
right?
I said Chris Reed. I would maybe stick by that. I think just because you didn't expect that to get the production that he's provided. at all, but he's batting somewhere over 300. He's come through clutch a lot. I'll maybe stick with that because he's provided a lot of stability to the lineup that he didn't think they would have.
Well, it sounds like the wind is blowing, so maybe we'll see some home runs tonight, and Zach Hess is going to have to get ahead in the count. That's always the key to him, right? And you know, we don't know exactly what you're going to get. We could get the really good Zach Hess or the one that gets behind, starts walking people, and gets in trouble. I know they want to set the tone on this thing early with Hess getting out of that first inning with nothing on the board and let him settle in. I would think that would be just what Paul Maneri ordered.
For sure, yeah. They need something good out of Hess tonight to set the tone. He likes pitching on these Friday nights. You know, he's pitched pretty well during SEC play, but we'll see.
How's the food in Columbia, Missouri? What is good?
I haven't gotten too much of it yet. The one place I went to, Addison's, was good. I'll have to let you know at the end of the weekend. I'm excited to get through St. Louis on the way back, though, and go to Pappy's Smokehouse. If anyone else is doing that kind of way back to St. Louis, back to Baton Rouge,
Go to Pappy's. Nice trip planning on your part. Very good. Very good. All right, my friend. Well, stay warm because I hear it's getting cold up there. So let's see if we can get all three in. And I greatly appreciate your time, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me on. Have a great day.
All right, yeah, that's no problem. That is Wilson Alexander live from Columbia, Missouri. Look, Missouri, the best ERA in the SEC with a 2.77 mark. Their staff is limiting opponents to 223, a batting average. They're fourth in the league in strikeouts with 354. So they also steal bases. An SEC best 66 steals in 85 attempts. You want to win two out of three at the worst. A sweep? Well, we haven't seen that yet. We'll see. 6:30 first pitch, 6 o'clock pregame show right here. 103.7 The Game with Chris Blair and the voice of Alec Box, my buddy Bill Franquez, on the road. We'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfert Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfert Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Playoff basketball is back and ready. The long regular season, about 177 days worth of it, is over. And now the playoffs begin. And with that, we bring in our NBA analyst, the feature writer of the NBA for Bleacher Report, the one and only Mr. Grant Hughes. Finally, the fun stuff begins. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm ready to stop paying attention to 14 other teams for a while. Let's focus on a good one.
Yes, indeed. All right. So before we get to the playoffs, it's the league that just keeps on giving. Your thoughts on why Magic Johnson did what he did, when he did it, and how he did it?
Well, I mean, the why, I mean, I think I kind of believe the why, which is just that, you know, from his perspective, this isn't any fun, and I get it. He's got a great life. He can do all these other things, and I don't think he was working as hard or was as interested in learning as much as you need to learn to really compete with, you know, 29 other teams that care about analytics and all these advances in player maintenance and the cap and all that. You know, it takes an army of really smart people to run an NBA organization. And I don't think he built a good enough support system, and he just wasn't around enough. So I get that. The how is the crazy part. You know, just doing it in an impromptu press conference in a tunnel, without telling your boss that you're going to do it. Without telling LeBron James when you met with him the day before, that's wild. But I think it's emblematic of the Lakers just being kind of a mess and really needing to get the next steps right, or this will just continue.
My theory is Magic was looking, going, man, I can't get anybody to come here and play with the guy, and this thing's going to get worse before it gets better, and I'm going to jump ship before my name gets dragged down in the dirt.
Yeah, that would change everything, right? If he knew that, you know, say they were going to get Kawhi Leonard, which they're not, or if they were going to get, or if they'd been able to get Paul George, which they couldn't, you know, that type of thing would have changed it, you know. But yeah, he may, I mean, he has to know something, or he has to know that things don't look good. So that's definitely a factor, too.
All right. There's going to be a new champion in the East for sure. No more Cleveland Cavaliers in this thing. The Bucks are the number one seed. They take on the Pistons. Let's just go through these and get a real quick little snippet of how you feel about it. Pistons don't have a shot against Milwaukee, do they?
No, I mean, I wouldn't give him a shot even if Blake Griffin were healthy. And if you saw him play the last couple games, he had 45 earlier this week, but that was just a fluke. He's not healthy. And if he's not healthy, they have zero. They have no chance. I think that's a pretty clear sweep to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. Raptors as the 2 seed taking on the 7 seed Orlando Magic. I don't see any difficulty with this one either.
No, I think Orlando could be a happy-to-be-there kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And the Raptors really, you know, the more I think about the Raptors, the more I think them and the Bucks are kind of a coin flip now to come out of the East. Toronto just looks really good lately.
Yeah, okay. The 3-seeded 76ers taking on the, I think, the overachieving job well done Brooklyn Nets, but I don't see the Sixers having trouble here either. Do you?
No, I mean, there's a couple. This is a little more interesting to me, mainly because Joel Embiid is possibly going to miss some time, and that changes a lot. And, you know, kind of nitty-gritty stuff. The Sixers are really bad against pick-and-roll point guards up at the top of the key. They've struggled with, you know, anybody that can hit a pull-up three or kind of break you down as a pick-and-roll ball handler. That's a weakness of theirs. And, you know, D'Angelo Russell has a lot of limitations. The one thing he's really good at is manipulating the pick and roll. So, you know, I could see the Nets winning a game, maybe two, if Embiid is out. But yeah, you know, I can't pick an upset there. That'd be crazy. The Nets just aren't that good.
Does the chalk continue? 4-seeded Celtics, 5th-seeded overachieving without Victor Oladipo. They did slip a few spots, but they're still, I think, a remarkable season by the Pacers.
I want to pick the Pacers so bad. I really do. you know, Marcus Smart hurt. I mean, he's going to miss that series. That's a factor. I don't like Kyrie Irving as a leader at all. I think we've learned this year that he's just not someone you depend on. But the talent discrepancy is still so big there without Oladipo. If I had to pick an upset, that'd be it, even though it's 4-5 and it's not a huge one. But, you know, Boston's got a lot of horses still, and the Pacers don't have their best player.
Yeah. A lot of chalk in the East as the 4 top seeds, I believe, and you do as well, will survive and advance in this one. Let's go out to the West. The Warriors, the number one seed, taking on the Clippers. Issues at all?
No, nothing there. I mean, the Clippers, they're going to try. They can't defend, and they're going to try to outscore everyone they play, and you can't outscore the Warriors.
Yeah, so forget that.
They may
get
a game when the Warriors mail it in, you know, for one of these, but there's no chance there.
Are you intrigued by the 2-seeded Nuggets and the 7-seeded Spurs?
I am. It's kind of the cliche way to look at it. You know, Denver, first year in the playoffs with this core, basically nobody but Paul Millsap has seen the postseason before. They offensively were, let me look at this just to be clear. They were 20th on offense after March 1st. Denver was. And I mean, this is a team that needs to score. The Spurs have the experience. You know, they've got Greg Popovich, all this stuff. So that could be a long series. I don't know, you know, if the Spurs have enough talent, but Denver's going to have to prove it to me, I think, basically, is the way I'd put it. We just don't know what that team's going to look like when the games really matter.
I think that's more than fair. I think the next 2 series in the West are the best of the first round, and that's the 3rd-seeded Trailblazers taking on, are we going to get the good playoff Oklahoma City Thunder, or are we going to get some of the bad regular season Oklahoma City Thunder? I think that's the big question.
Yeah, I think there are a couple interesting things. The Thunder were under 500 after the All-Star break, and their defense, which started out so hot, it really fell off a cliff. They don't have enough shooting, all this stuff. But if you just kind of line it up and you say, all right, Paul George, you know, MVP candidate for a chunk of the year, you got Russell Westbrook, who I'm not a great fan of, but he's going to impact that series. You know, he's going to make a big difference. Steven Adams, you know, suddenly Yusuf Nurkic isn't on the other side to bang with him, so that's a factor. And C.J. McCollum's coming off an injury for the Blazers. They have Dame Lillard, who to me is probably the second best player in the series after George. I think he's a better player than Russell Westbrook. To me, you know, the Blazers just, unless Lillard can go for 40 almost every night, I'm going to have a hard time seeing where those points come from. So the Thunder have been kind of a mess. Both these teams are really nowhere near their full strength for different reasons. But I think I kind of like the Thunder to win this. And it almost doesn't feel like an upset because the Blazers are missing their starting center. But, but you know, it's a 6-3. The Blazers won 4 more games this year than the Thunder. I could see the Thunder taking this. And then if you look at that side of the bracket, I could take the Thunder over Denver or San Antonio, whoever comes out of that series, which is crazy to see them maybe in the conference finals.
I am with you, Jack, and that would be the second year old. The Blazers would exit at in the first round. Last year, it was the Pelicans that took care of business. And I'm intrigued by this one because I like the Utah Jazz against the Houston Rockets because I like them to be able to challenge up front. And if you get beat, I love Rudy Gobert as the rim protector on those drives. So I think this is a really intriguing matchup.
Couple things, yeah, definitely. I totally agree with you. This series, if you really wanted to distill it down, kind of becomes how many floaters can James Harden hit in a series? Because you, like you said, Rudy Gobert is going to be waiting there. They're definitely going to try to involve Gobert in every pick and roll they run, or they're going to try to make him be the guy that has to step up when Harden beats his guy in isolation, which he will. I don't care who it is out there on him. And the Jazz are not going to concede open threes. They let Gobert hang in there and say, you know, I'm going to use that wingspan, use that 9-7 standing reach and make somebody hit a tough shot. And Harden last year couldn't hit floaters, and this year he suddenly was great at it. So that's a huge thing to watch. But look, consider this, though. The Jazz have been the best defense in the league since January 1st. They've been the third best team by net rating, basically margin of victory, since January 1st. That's not like a two-week sample. That's most of the year.
Right.
So the Jazz are way better than 50-32, way better. And the Rockets have come on, too, but I don't know. Flip a coin there. I like that to go 7, and I like the Jazz to make it really tough or even just win it.
As much as you would love to pick the Pacers over the Celtics, that's how badly, double it, I would love the Jazz to beat the Rockets. So yeah. I'm hoping that is the case. Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report, kind enough to join us. I'm interested in your thoughts. The Pelicans have, narrowed down their GM search to I don't know what they're going to do. Are they going to have a president and a GM? What are you hearing about the Pelicans?
Well, the thing with them is things are changing now. And that's because suddenly there's this Lakers situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and Rob Pelinka, who was the GM under Magic, supposedly is still going to be there, but I don't understand why you would keep the guy that is going to have a new boss installed at some point. And so really the Pelicans kind of dropped down the pecking order a little bit because obviously even with all the dysfunction, the Lakers job is going to get all the top candidates first.
Good point, yeah.
So you got to think about that. You know, there are several other teams that you could see a shakeup. The Kings just fired Dave Yeager. Vlade Divac just consolidated power there. There's another front office shakeup. So, you know, your guess is as good as mine with the Pelicans. I mean, and really the question is going to be, will whoever is installed to replace Del Demps, you know, take a different approach? Will it be a clean slate? Will he be willing to talk to the Lakers again after, you know, Demps sort of froze them out over the Davis stuff?
Right.
I don't have a good feel for that, but certainly now the Lakers are going to be the first domino to fall. And I think probably David Griffin, who has worked with LeBron before in Cleveland, has got to be the top option there. I don't know really what that leaves for the Pelicans after that.
Is Luke Walton coaching them? I mean, all of a sudden it seems like Luke Walton is in favor. Everybody knew he was going to get fired, and then Magic did what Magic did. So do you see Walton coaching them again next year?
I don't know. I think if I were Luke Walton, I don't know if I'd want to be there. And that's for a couple of reasons. One, you're going to have another new boss, most likely. Mm-hmm. Two, coaching LeBron James is really hard, and you just are never going to have as much power or say as you would for any other franchise that doesn't have LeBron James. So, and the Kings opening is one that Walton is their top candidate now for sure. And the Kings are not a model of the high-functioning NBA franchise by any stretch, but they might have it on the Lakers right now at this point.
Yeah.
So if I had to bet, I don't think he's going to be there next year. I think whoever comes in is going to want somebody else, and LeBron is going to weigh in, obviously, too. So if I had to choose, I don't think Walton's coaching the Lakers next year.
Who is the coach for LeBron? He gets rid of coaches left and right. Is there a coach out there that can handle him that I'm sure he has to respect? I mean, Pat Riley's not coming out of retirement. Phil Jackson's not coming out of retirement, or is he? Who can coach the guy?
Well, I mean, just name me the coach that, A, everyone agrees is a good X's and O's coach, good people manager, all the stuff you normally care
about.
It's
got to be Popovich.
Sure. Yeah, Popovich would be the guy. I mean, maybe Doc Rivers. I don't know. There's so few guys. All the guys you hear LeBron likes, you know, Tyronn Lue. I think Mark Jackson even is someone that LeBron has. There isn't a guy, I think, that is a good coach, one, and two, LeBron respects, that the Lakers could realistically hire. You know, so I just don't know if there is such a guy right now. And the Lakers got to figure it out. They wasted the year of LeBron's prime. And if you do it again, it's just, you know, that's like an NBA felony, basically. You can't waste years of LeBron's prime.
If they don't, does LeBron force a trade to somewhere else?
You know, I saw that possibility raised. And if I were LeBron, I don't think I'd want anything to do with the Lakers right now.
I'm telling you.
You know, but the thing is, it was his. He decided this was the place to go. He had
I got an idea.
Magic last summer.
I got the idea. If Anthony Davis won't go join LeBron, let LeBron come join Anthony Davis in New Orleans. There it is. Anthony Davis, Drew Holiday, LeBron James. Come on.
Well, you forgot one other thing. Pelicans win the lottery and draft Zion Williamson.
There you go.
Let's do that too.
I mean, that's crazier things have been done. If you can't bring the Peter to Paul, bring Paul to Peter. I'm grasping. Jeez Louise. Who's your MVP this year?
That's Giannis. You know, Harden did all this crazy stuff, but, you know, Giannis might be Defensive Player of the Year, too. And anytime that's in the conversation, you know, he's something different. If a guy goes 27, 12, and 5 and is also a Defensive Player of the Year candidate on the best team in the league, bigger on-off impact than Harden, all this stuff, it's crazy to say. I don't even feel like it's that close. And Harden might win it, but in my opinion, I think it's Giannis by 20.
Who's your coach of the year?
I feel like there's 10 guys you could give it to. Rivers, McMillan in Indiana, even Jaeger, who just got fired, got the Kings turned around and almost made the playoffs. It's Budenholzer, though, with the Bucks to me. I mean, you know, he changed everything they do on both ends, and suddenly they win 60 games. It's, you know, if you're talking about, like, measurable year-over-year impact, there's nobody even close to what he did.
Finally, one last question with the Golden State Warriors is, are you pleased with what Boogie Cousins has brought to the table, or are you wishing they never did bring him to the table?
No, I you know, for as long as you and I have talked, I think we've both been out on him, right? I don't like that, you know, the things he's good at, which is, you know, high volume offense, the Warriors don't need, and the things he's bad at, you know, playing hard all the time, not poisoning the game with his attitude, defensive awareness, defensive effort. They need that stuff. He doesn't provide it. So if he doesn't play a meaningful minute in the playoffs, I think they're probably better.
He is Grant Hughes. All right, the fun begins on Saturday. We greatly appreciate your time. Sit back, relax, and enjoy it. Could get it. I don't think the first round is going to be all that great across the board, but it could get interesting after that. Is that fair?
Yeah, I like that. I think you got to kind of brush away half of these teams, and then it'll get really good in the conference semis.
All right. Enjoy it, my friend. Thank you so much, Grant.
You got it.
All right. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. This is the Jordy Helpert Show.
Your there's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfer Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. Friday, hot dog, 53 minutes after the hour. The latest from Augusta, Molinari, Jason Day, 7 under par. Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, 6 under par. Ian Poulter, John Rahm, 5 under par. Patton Kizzire, Kuchar, Phil Mickelson, Justin Thomas, Corey Connors, Justin Harding, Adam Scott, Louis Wiesthaden, 4 under par. Tiger Woods is at 3 under. He just missed a birdie putt on 7, teeing off at 8, and looks like he's found a fairway bunker. So his erratic drives, he bogeyed number 5 with his he erased a bogey at number 5 with his second birdie of the day. He rolled in a 20-footer at the par 3 sixth hole. So, you know, he's having some moments here. Just got to stay close. Got to stay in the hunt. And get to the back nine and see what he can do along that line. Back to the headlines of the day. Will Wade meeting with LSU officials and a representative from the NCAA. Where? I don't know. When it started, I don't know. How long it's gone, is it over with or not, I do not know. Very, very, very quiet. But it would not surprise me if around 5 o'clock, something like that, a statement comes out from LSU, one way or the other. And we'll see. We will see. Meanwhile, Darius Days, freshman forward, announced that he is returning to LSU for his sophomore season. You lose Cavell Bigby Williams, his eligibility ran out. Naz Reid, Tremont Waters, Skylar Mays, Javonte Smart, Emmett Williams, all declaring for the NBA draft. That's 6 of your 8. You played 8, 6 of them are gone. Well, maybe some will come back. We'll see. They have until May 28th or 9th to say, all right, I'm gonna drop my agent and I'm coming back. You know, last night at midnight was the last day you could declare for the draft to get an agent to help you in the process. So we'll see. The projected cut at Augusta is plus 3 as we speak. So people like Zach Johnson and Mike Weir on the cut line, Martin Keimer on the cut line. Others that, Sergio Garcia is at plus 4. Freddie Couples at plus 6. Charles Schwartzel, plus 7. Ian Woosnam at plus 11. Vijay Singh at plus 12. Jose Maria Olazabal and Angel Cabrera are at plus 13. So they're cooked. All right, we'll wrap up hour number one. We will take a break, come back to start off hour number two. We'll update the leaderboard, get into hot topics, and much, much more. Friday from Augusta. Well, not really. From Acadiana. Wouldn't want to be anywhere else. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Come on back.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle!
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Helfrich.
All right, hour number two. How's your Friday doing? It's not much longer till quitting time, and it's great to be with you this hour of the program brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets with about 59 of them in southern and central Louisiana. I stopped off at the one in Doosan. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. They've got everything. Everything. And man, I'm telling you, if you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. You just can't. All right, Phil Mickelson finishes with a second round 73. He's at 4 under par, 3 behind the current leaders, Francesco Molinari, Jason Day, both in the clubhouse after shooting 67s. They are at 7 under par. Dustin Johnson is 6 under par, shooting a second round 70. Brooks Koepka is at 6 under par. He's closing out round number two as we speak. So without further ado, let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit that button.
It's Friday. That means we get you ready for the weekend ahead with 5 1 2 3 4 5 big questions headed into your weekend. Now let's get it going with your Friday 5 edition of Hot Topics.
All right, my man, fire away. Let's roll with it.
Jordy, we got to start things off with some late breaking news. Right as in the middle of the 2-minute drill, this pops up. And that is from the La La Land, Jordy. Shams breaks the news of the Athletic and Stadium. The Lakers and Luke Walton have parted ways, Jordy. It felt like it wasn't going to happen whenever you saw Magic Johnson bounce out the door, but right move for the Lakers?
He won't be unemployed very long, I can promise you. Memphis needs a coach. The Sacramento Kings need a coach. So he won't be unemployed very much longer. I guess it was discombobulation in upper management and all that stuff. So if I'm Luke Walton, I'm like, get me out of here. Yes, indeed. Get me out of here so I can get another gig where it's not so full of drama every day. So there you go.
I'm sure he'd be down with that, Jordy. Get out of there, man.
Yep. Tyronn Lue, here we go. T-Lue.
Oh, my goodness, Jordy. That'd be amazing. But now we got to look ahead to what's going on this weekend, and we got to start things off looking at the world of baseball, Jordy. So what's the more interesting weekend series in your mind? LSU-Mizzou or the Houston Astros-Seattle Mariners series?
Oh, my gosh. I can't pick between the two. You know, LSU, near and dear to my heart, obviously, so that's significant because this is the halfway mark of the SEC season, so it has a whole lot more value to it. We're still in the infancy stages of MLB, so I'm going to go with LSU, Missouri. Now, if this was August, then that's a different story between the Astros and the Mariners, but the Mariners are red hot, no question. Astros got their act together when they took care of business against the Yankees. So two really good teams at this point in time. But because of the duration, the time of the schedule, it's got to be more emphasis on LSU-Missouri.
I'd have to agree with you, Jordy. I think it is more emphasis on LSU-Mizzou because Mizzou's a damn good team. And for what I was talking with some people, it's definitely going to be one to keep an eye on this weekend.
Yeah.
But I mean, I am still going to be interested in the Astros-Mariners, more specifically with tonight, Jordy. Two Louisiana natives squaring off, Wade Miley. And
how about that?
That is just really cool, having two Louisiana natives, one from Hammond, America, the other one from Lake Charles.
I'm with you. Good for them. I love when Louisiana players make it to the big leagues and make it happen. So that's good. That's great.
It's fantastic, Jordy. And now we got to move over to the Masters, a tradition unlike any other. And yesterday, Tiger Woods didn't do half bad.
No?
Shooting a 70. Wasn't quite enough to get him a spot on the first place on the leaderboard.
Right.
But he actually talked a little bit about it after Thursday's first round, saying that he opened up with a 70. He's been good to him before.
I've only shot, I think, under 70 one time, but I've shot 70 the four times that I have won here. So
right.
We've still got a long way to go. I mean, tee off late tomorrow and wind's supposed to be up. So I got my work cut out for me the rest of the week, and so does everyone else.
And my thing is, Jordy, do you think he can still be in contention to win it all, considering the fact everybody else that's in there right now, because it's definitely a little bit of a crowded house at this point, can he still be in contention come Sunday?
Yeah, he's only four shots back as we speak, so it's not like they're running and hiding from him. He's just got to make. He's just got to drive it better and make some putts. But he's right there in the thick of things. So absolutely, he can be in contention on Sunday. Yes, indeed.
I hope he is, Jordy, because we talked about it. I believe either Thursday or Wednesday was how great it could be to have Tiger Woods come Sunday final round. He's in contention. That's going to get everybody's attention and then some. Everybody's be tuned in to CBS, of course, weather permitting.
Ratings bonanza, no question about it. So I'm hoping that's the case. We'll see.
Yeah, exactly, Jordy. And now we're going to move over to the NBA playoffs because a lot of things are coming out right now about Joel Embiid. He could very well be out of game one with his knee injury. Could that be a huge storyline in the first round of the playoffs with Joel Embiid being such a big factor for the Philadelphia 76ers? And he could very well be out for multiple games. Up against a team of the Brooklyn Nets, they could probably wind up beating 9 times out of 10.
Brooklyn Nets pretty darn good. They're nobody to overlook, especially if Embiid is not. I mean, if he's 80%, that's an issue. So let's keep an eye on that one. That's something to be noteworthy of. Embiid so key to what they do when he's on the line on the floor. They've got as good a starting five as just about everybody other than the Golden State Warriors. So he's pivotal, no question.
All right, Jordy, moving over to the NFL draft. It's still a couple weeks away, but I want to find this out, Jordy. Was that Greedy Williams, he's had no visit scheduled for the NFL draft right now, and it feels weird right now. Weird to hear that, Jordy. No visit scheduled for any teams in the draft after he's been considered one of those first-round talents.
Well, that tells me one thing. That tells me they've got all the information they need, and they don't need to waste his time or waste their time. They know that he's probably been targeted by a team or two, and they feel very comfortable with him. So it is unusual, but it's not a precedent-setting situation. It's happened before with other players that have turned out just fine. Tyler Eifert was one of them, and he turned out pretty good until he got to the Saints. but other than that, I think Greedy's going to be just fine.
I think you could say that a lot about some players, Jordy. Once they go to the Saints, things don't necessarily turn out the way you want it to. Browner, Brandon.
Yeah, exactly. I got one for you.
Okay, go ahead.
We got to give a shout-out to longtime assistant coach at UL, Kevin Johnson of the basketball program. He is leaving. He's going to be joining Ron Hunter's staff at Tulane. So I'm sure money became a factor, and that's a really good basketball league he's going to. So Ron Hunter, poaching from Bob Marlin's staff.
Not a fan, Jordy, of him.
I got you.
Getting rid of, taking one of the better assistant coaches. Definitely something Bob Marlin's going to have to keep an eye on. But you brought me down a different path, Jordy. So real quick, before we wrap up this Friday edition of the Friday 5 Plus One today, with Sean Payton, he addressed the rumors that have been going around about him headed to the Cowboys. He talked about it on WWL, I believe. And he put it simply, Jordy, he's got flirtily tattoos that can't be erased. How great is that drop from him?
Sean Payton is just going up the ladder higher and higher. The fans that love him, that's just classic Sean Payton. Way to go. You can keep the Dallas Cowboys. He and Drew Brees are tied to the hip. They ain't going nowhere as long as Breeze is there for however long that is. So we shall see. Brooks Koepka just birdied 18. He's at 7 under. 3-way tie for the lead. So there you have it. All right, we'll take a timeout. Hot Topics brought to you by the best hot sauce on the planet, Cajun Chef. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce wherever you go because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. The Three Amigos next.
Topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
All right. We did this next segment all throughout the college football season. We called it the Three Amigos, reunited, and it feels so good. Clint and I just knocked out Hot Topics, so let's bring in the third member of the tripod, our good friend, Mr. George Becknell. George, it's been a while, my friend. How are you?
Man, I'm fantastic. And Jordan and Clint, dude, it has been a while, man. I miss y'all.
Well, that's my bad. But we're back. We're good. So let's get busy, all right? LSU and the NCAA and Will Wade meeting today. Meanwhile, the mass exodus of players, how surprised that everyone but Marlon Taylor and Darius Days have declared for the NBA draft. And do you see any of them coming back to LSU?
Well, Jordy, I'm not surprised at all, because anytime you have a situation like what's going on right now at LSU, where the coach's future is in question, as a player, you want to get out of that situation. You don't know who's coming in. You don't know what's going to happen. You got a chance to go to the NBA. Even if you don't make a roster, you can develop yourself in the G League. I'm not shocked at all that most of these guys have declared for the draft. So the only way I think some of these guys will stay at LSU and, you know, pull their name out of the hat is if it's determined that Will Wade is coming back and there will be no sanctions against the program. But I think that's the only way they are safe. But I'm not surprised at all.
Good point. Clint, what do you think?
You know, I have to kind of agree with George there, because most part, when you look at kind of how this thing is a lot like what we've seen in the past with a Ole Miss, for instance, with the whole situation with Hugh Freeze. It's definitely a rocky road, but with the way college basketball is, you can bounce out of there after a year, and you can probably wind up trying to test your wares in the NBA or, as George put it, the G League. I think that's going to be a big reason why I think these guys are doing that, because they have a chance to make money. They don't have to worry about kind of having to jump ship and transfer out at the end of the day. I think the only player that could wind up probably going back if he doesn't get drafted, that might be Skylar Mays, just because he seems like a guy that's got a good head on his shoulders and knows what he wants to do well after basketball is all said and done for him. But beyond that, it's kind of hard to say anybody could be coming back.
Here's my thoughts on this process. Last night was the deadline to enter your name. There's no harm in entering. If you don't enter, then you got no chance. So you enter. Very few, maybe Reed and Waters get invited to the NBA Combine. No one else will be invited. So I don't think it does any harm to enter. They can get an agent. They can test the waters and see. They have till the end of May to make a decision. By that time, they'll know from if their agent's worth a grain of salt. He'll make all the inquiries. He'll find out what the mood is of NBA teams, what their thoughts are on these players. The NBA teams will tell it to him straight up. He's going to be a second-round pick. He's going to be a free agent. And then these kids can come back as long as they sever ties with that agent. So I'm not surprised all five of them entered. I would be stunned if all five of them stay into the NBA draft. I'm just telling you, I wouldn't be shocked if Mays, Smart, and Williams all come back to LSU under the caveat of what George said. Will Wade is reinstated, and there's no NCAA penalties. So we will see. With that in mind, uncertainty in the New Orleans Pelicans, George. The GM's going to have, the new GM, whoever that person's going to be, is going to have total autonomy. With that being said, will Alvin Gentry be the coach of the Pelicans next year?
Well, Jordan, I don't think Alvin Gentry should be the coach of the Pelicans next year, because, you know, whenever a GM comes in, a GM always wants to hire their guy. You see all the time where there's an incumbent head coach, there's a new GM, they're always butting heads. I think where the Pelicans are, they need to start fresh. Not saying that Alvin Gentry was a bad coach. I don't think he was a good coach either. But I think they just need to start off fresh. Because if you look at this Pelicans roster, you still got some good players to work with. You're like maybe one or two players away from making a playoff run. I like Holiday. I like Julius Randle. I like what Okafor can do on the offensive side of the ball. is not a total dumpster fire like you would think. So you have a chance to have a good team next year. Let's start out fresh. Go get a GM, get the coach you want, and let's get back to making the playoffs in the West.
All right. Clint, Alvin Gentry next year?
I wouldn't be surprised if he's the head coach next year, Jordy, because of the way that he was talking at the end of all of it. He wants to lean towards being the head coach going forward. He wants his team to succeed. He wants his team to be great. And he has a lot of great ideas. I think it was just hard for him to pull it off with some of the players that he had. I mean, we saw this team probably have some of the best pace in the league consistently. But with a guy like Anthony Davis, who is injury prone, you get some smaller, younger guys. I think his idea, his game plan can kind of work out quite well. It's all about who you can wind up getting in the draft and where you're going to wind up being placed in the draft. I think to give them at least one more year to kind of implement it with this current crop of guys. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. Kick is behind out the door, the All-Star break.
Four seasons with the Pelicans. Gentry's led the team to the playoffs once. He's got a 145-183 record, 442 winning percentage. Yes, injuries have been a major part of the three losing seasons. No question about that. He's got to go. He's got to go. Not going to be the coach. Not in my book. A lot of coaches, I mean, they just fired the Jaeger from the Sacramento Kings, who led them to their best record in years, and he's gone. I don't think Alvin Gentry is going to be the coach. I think I kind of agree with George. The new GM is going to want to bring in his guy. The question is, who is that GM and who is his guy? We'll see. Very, very important season, needless to say, for the New Orleans Pelicans. With that in mind, George, anybody going to give Golden State a run for their money this year in the playoffs?
Well, Jordan, I don't think Golden State is as invincible as they once were. Yeah, they still got all the players, but I think there's a lot of other distractions going on. Like, they don't know if Kevin Durant's coming back. They're trying to implement Boogie Cousins. I don't know if that locker room is as healthy as it used to be. So I think they're vulnerable. Now, they probably will win it, but I like the feel. I like the teams in the East. I like what the 76ers have. I like Toronto. So I think the Warriors have a chance to lose. They're probably more vulnerable than they've ever been. So I give the feel a shot. If I had to put my money on the Warriors or the feel, I'm putting it on the feel this year.
All right. CD.
I think you got to go with the Golden State Warriors here. They're just too darn good, and there's nobody on the other side of the Eastern Conference that really sticks out to me and says, hey, they can wind up being the giant killers, if you will. Sure, the Toronto Raptors are a really good team with Kawhi Leonard, but can they be able to beat a team like a Golden State Warriors squad that just feels like they are – In Space Jam, they're the Monstars right now, Jordy. They are a team that's going to wind up being incredibly tough to beat when it's all said and done in this postseason.
And the Greek Freak said no to LeBron on the Space Jam.
I think
too.
Anthony Davis did.
No, I think the Greek Freak did too. He said, my friends. Yeah, the Greek Freak said, nope, not in it. Nope, forget it. I'm going to be the next one, Space Jam 3. I just want to beat you guys. I'm not your friend. Let me ask you all this. Do the Golden State Warriors still have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant and Draymond Green? Do they still have those guys?
Probably.
For a few more weeks.
Okay. Nobody's beating the Golden State Warriors. And then they can break up the band, do whatever the heck they want. But they're gonna win this one for sure. All right, let me ask you all this. Tell me your Sunday plans and tell me if it – here's mine. I actually hope it rains in where I am. I hope it pours down rain so I have no excuse, I have nowhere to go. I can watch the Masters. Then I can watch the season opening Game of Thrones capped by episode 3 of Billions on Showtime. So that's my Sunday. Order in and just sit on the couch and watch it. George, what can you top those Sunday plans, my friend?
Jordy, I actually have some of those same Sunday plans. I'm gonna go to Donaldsonville. I'm gonna watch, hang out with the family. I'm gonna watch some of the NBA playoffs. Then I'll be headed to a Game of Thrones season premiere party as well. So
go ahead.
I'm House Stark. You know, I'm waiting for Sansa and Jon Snow, well, Jon Targaryen, to go ahead and, you know, take the throne, sit on the Iron Throne. So that's what I'll be doing. So we got some of the same plans.
All right, CD, what's your Sunday looking like?
On my Sunday, you know, definitely going to wind up watching some of the final round of the Masters. Of course, that's if it winds up going down the way it's supposed to, because I know there might be some weather kind of putting a damper on things on the final day of the tournament. Hopefully they can get it all in. Outside of that, nothing really. I'm not a big Game of Thrones guy, Jordy. So
okay.
On Sunday, that's not going to be my type of thing. But outside that, not much really on the docket this weekend.
I forgot to mention I'm going to add some crawfish to that Sunday extravaganza. So, all right. Well, guys, George, great to have you back on, buddy. We'll do it again soon, man. Have a great weekend, all right?
You do the same, and let's go House Talk.
I like the Dragon Queen, baby. I like the Dragon Lady. That's who I like. Anyway, all right, we'll take a quick time out here. That brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. And by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge for all your travel needs. 5 miles, 50 miles, 500 miles. DC's Little Capital Exxon has everything you want and everything you need. I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game.
With a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, here we go. Welcome back. He's the best in the business. If you don't have his M&D draft report, then you're missing out on everything you need to know about the upcoming NFL draft. My good friend, the best in the business, Mike Dettillier, kind enough to join us. Michael, Hayes in the barn, buddy. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you, Jordy.
Before we get to the draft, your thoughts on LSU and spring football? I know there's not a lot to – it's all vanilla, but you have a discerning eye when it comes to talent, so you're watching players do their thing. What impressed you the most from what you saw last Saturday?
Well, also, too, I've been to a couple of practices. So I think you have seen a difference offensively in that this is going to be a short, quick passing game, very similar to what you see, you know, around college football today and in the pros. And getting the ball more out to the backs coming out the backfield. I think that was something Joe Brady has brought in to the scheme, so to speak, and Coach O likes that part of it. This will still be a run-oriented team that, you know, they like the power part of the game. That's how O has always been. But I think the feature of the short, quick passing game and letting that wide out sort of one-on-one things downfield and like an extended handoff is new to LSU. We haven't seen much of that. And so I like that part of it. I thought certainly the big difference is you got Joe Burrow out there playing as quarterback. That's a major difference than what we've seen in the past. And, you know, Joe's got control of this team. I think Miles is the talent, the arm talent, and he's gotten better. He has some erratic moments with him. But he's really talented as a passer. Man, he can spin it. And you got those receivers. You got a real talented group there. The negative is the tackle positions, and not only just one, but both right and left. You're getting a lot of pressure. And that to me is a concern today and was a concern before and a concern after. Defensively, you sort of dominated things up front. and certainly the two freshmen with Stingley and Ika sort of showed, you know, those guys can play. And you've got a big defensive lineman that can step in and do that quickly. That's impressive. That doesn't happen every day. And think about this scrimmage you played and you didn't have Kalavon Chase on. You didn't have Christian Fulton. You didn't have Rashard Lawrence. You didn't have Jacob Phillips. LSU's defense is really talented. That's not a concern for me unless you get a rash of injuries along the defensive line. The big question mark to me is certainly at the tackle position and who's going to be your place kicker. Cole Tracy's going to be difficult to replace.
Yes.
I mean, he was really good.
Yes.
And he's going to end up, Jordy, being the first kicker off the board. As a draft choice. I mean, from inside 50 yards, he's been really accurate. He didn't do the kicking, so to speak. He did it at Assumption on kickoffs, but he hadn't done it here at LSU. And he's worked with Martin Anderson on that. In fact, a year ago, Martin came on with Bobby J and I and told us, hey, I really like him. We had Dad met up at a function, and he said, I want to work with him. And I think he worked with him a little bit last year, but he's been working with Cole quite a bit on just sort of making sure the swing is right, so to speak, as a kicker, and also between the ears. Marty's always told me that's the biggest thing with a kicker. A lot of guys can kick, but he said, it's when they miss a few, he said, it becomes like a golfer. Then you really off. And I think that's one of the things that, I wouldn't want to work with anybody more than Marty, who really has perfected that. And we were talking about this. This had to be 88 or 87, 88. We did a long interview, and he brought it up to me that he was seeing a counselor in the off season on kicking the ball, going through the motions, in essence, kicking the ball before he actually kicked it.
Okay.
Going through this training mental with imagery. His mind.
Uh-huh.
And that was unheard of. People laughed at him, said, man, Martin, what's going on? You got issues? He was like, no, I don't have issues. I want to stay at the top of my game. And we had a good laugh about it because I remember that was people were asking him, hey, what's wrong, Martin? You got a problem? No, Martin, he didn't have too many problems back in 87.
No. Everybody used to laugh when Tiger Woods would go lift weights. What are you doing? Well, how did that turn out? So same thing with Morton Anderson. Mike Dettillier, kind enough to join us. Does LSU have the talent in the right places to compete with the big boys next season, in your opinion?
I think the three teams that have pulled away from the field have been Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia. Can LSU be the fourth team? I think they've got as good a shot as anyone. But they're in the hunt. And you look at the key positions at quarterback, if you can get Chase on back healthy, the corner positions. You're going to need a little bit of help. And we still have some unknown at the running back spot. Because that's something, no matter what all this
change,
it's still going to run the ball.
Yes. Do they have a bell cow?
I do know where he grew up. I do know where he played his high school ball and where he went to college and where he coached. Running the football is still important to him. And a physical brand of ball, how Emory and Tyron Davis Price, how they'll turn out to be. But, Jordy, everybody's got a weakness somewhere, okay?
Yeah.
There is no college team who's perfect. But they have closed the gap here. And, again, it comes down to that Texas game early. And, boy, if you can win that one, you can build some momentum up. You have Florida who's giving you some issues, but you got them at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then certainly Alabama, and you got them on the road. And eventually, come on, you got to win one.
Yeah.
You have to win one.
Yeah.
And that's the only way Ed and LSU can kind of kick this stick off their shoulder. They got to go out and win one. But they do have certainly pieces in place here that will give them an opportunity. And I do think the final game, against A&M, which I think that's going to end up being a huge game and a rivalry game, not only by how the connections with Jimbo here, but also how it ended a year ago. That's going to be some major carryover into this year. A&M's schedule this year is difficult. I got to talk to Jimbo, and he go through that schedule, and a lot of that is on the road. It's a little bit more challenging than it was, say, a year ago when most of those games were at home, and he loses the two key pieces offensively in Trevion Williams at running back and Jay Sternberger at tight end.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mike Dottiglia, the M&D Draft Report. LSU schedule much, much more favorable this year. Devin White's not replaceable. I understand that. You're going to have to do it by committee. But Dave Aranda's smart. He's got those two big behemoths now that in Ika and Rankins. That's what he really wants, that big stuff the run, stuff the gaps, and let your linebackers run and make plays, right? So Aranda must be thrilled.
Yeah, and, you know, when Jacob comes back, he's got a chance to be a special player. You know, you just saw his talents and his ability to get around blocks. He's physical. He's a really good open field tackler, and he drops back well in coverage. And then Mike Divinity and what he's been able to do, and what I think you'll see, and I'm not giving any trade secrets away, but what I think what they're going to do is have Divinity play inside on first and second down, and then him rush the quarterback on third. Listen, don't take a rocket scientist to figure that one out.
Yeah, that's right.
And then they're going to put Divinity and Chase on each side, and I think at times you'll see Andre Anthony, who's made a lot of improvement as a player. I think that part of him learning how to use his arms and hands a little bit better as a technician has come through. But boy, Mike Divinity, he's got a chance to be an early round pick, and his versatility now comes into play here. It's a lot different playing inside linebacker than outside linebacker. Your angles to the ball carrier are different because you're coming off the edge. You're using your speed and you're just flashing through. As an inside linebacker, there's maybe a little bit of figuring out exactly where that ball carrier is going in a lot quicker because it's straight. But, man, he's picked it up extremely well. Dave's been thrilled with him. Coach O has just talked worlds about how well Mike Divinity has come around. But the secondary and how they're going to use all those guys and being able to play a lot of nickel and dime on teams that will spread you out. They have that ability this year, certainly, and if Fulton's back healthy, I think last year he was unbelievable down the stretch until he got hurt, and you got Stingley. Kelvin Joseph has made a lot of improvement there. Kerry Vincent's going to play in the nickel, and then certainly you got one of the signature players in college football in Grant Delpit.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Jacoby Stevens, they're going to move him all around, too. And I think also Harris, who's really made a lot of improvement at that safety position. I remember before he even came in, Coach O told me, Mike, he's going to be a star for us one day. He said, I think he's that good, he's going to be a star. And it came down on that scholarship to either Harris or Meek Robertson from Thibodeau, who's now been a two-time all-conference player at Tech.
Yeah, pretty good player.
And listen, I was big, borrow, steal, whatever I had to do to get him to go to LSU, to get Ed to understand, because Les had courted him but hadn't offered. And then once Ed got the job, they offered, but Tech was way ahead of the game at that point.
Right.
And Emeek wanted to play. And I'll never forget Frank Monica telling me something. I did a touchdown club meeting there, and he said, Mike, I played against Odell Beckham at Isadora Newman, and Emeek Robertson's a better high school player than Odell Beckham.
Wow. Amazing. Mike Dottiglia, stories for years. All right, let's go over the draft. If who's the best player? Who's the best football player
Quinnen
in the
Williams
draft?
From Alabama for me.
Okay.
I just thought last year at that position, he's playing over the – he's a nose guard. He was dominating. I mean, every play, and you were trying to block him. And it was difficult because he's one of those special talents as a player. and you see, you don't get that often from an interior player. So Quinnen would be my number one guy. Nick Bosa didn't play a lot of football last year, but when he did, he was a dominating guy. And then they all sort of jammed in after that with Rashawn Gary, Montez Sweat, Josh Allen at 3, 4, 5. All those guys defensively. And then Devin 7. So only Kyler Murray sort of gets in between all of that. So six of the top seven players on the defensive side of the football. But Quinnen Williams separated himself from the group. And it's rare that you get an interior player that just totally controlled things up front. And did we hear anything from Quinnen Williams the year before?
No.
He was a rotational player.
Yes.
And what just great strides. And a lot of people don't know this, but actually Pete Jenkins, who after he left LSU, he became sort of a counselor. He'd go from school to school.
Yeah.
And he worked with Josh Allen at Kentucky, who's going to end up being a top four pick. But he also spent 9 days at Alabama. And he told me afterwards, man, they got a guy there in Quinnen Williams. He's going to be difficult for people to take a hold of. And, man, he was absolutely right.
Is Greedy Williams still going in the first round?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think that the misperception we had was that every year that was always that corner that would go in the top 12 or 10. And, I hear some of these guys nationally say, well, we took a look at film and he doesn't tackle. Well, what? LSU has played on TV the last 2 years. You couldn't figure out that Greedy's not a good open field tackler by now? Oh, good gracious. It goes to show how little they watch these games. It was always obvious that Greedy, and he's admitted that, he needs to get stronger. He needs to be a better open field tackler. But his size, his length, his long arms, he plays the ball like a receiver. But like every other corner and safety in this draft class, he's going to wait because the big men are going to get taken ahead of him. So it's pushed him into the 20s in round one, along with Byron Murphy from Washington, DeAndre Baker from Georgia. Those guys, it's just sort of jammed them. It's not that they did anything wrong. It's just the big man theory comes into play here. And two, in the NFL, either you got a quarterback or you're looking for one. And they're going to have four quarterbacks go off the board by the first 20 picks.
Wow. Who's the third LSU player drafted?
Oh, it'll be Foster Morrow. I think that he was a guy when the season started, you probably looked at him more as a late-round pick. excuse me. But his blocking skills, his ability to pass protect, when you was a good run block, he played on special teams, great leader. He was sure-handed when they threw it to him, but he's only caught 46 passes the last 2 years. We didn't see him used in that short, intermediate part of the game. Listen, LSU won't say it, but how obvious is it? They had to keep him in to help protect Joe Burrow. Come on, either that or he's staring at stadiums across America. Yeah. The offensive line couldn't protect him at times without help either from a back or a tight end. He shocked me in how well he could run. And he's worked with a track coach and has gotten him better. He was always a good athlete, though. And so I knew he would test pretty well. I didn't know he would test that well, but I always sort of had a feeling he would test pretty well. He catches the ball well. He's a leader. He's focused. This means a lot to him. You think about, he was sort of one of the last guys to get that scholarship. He was headed to Tulane.
Yeah, yeah.
And his mom had been an athlete at Tulane. Right. He was headed there. And then the final moments, it got an opening, and they brought Foster in. And I think he ends up being a late third or early fourth round pick. And he's a good all-around player. He's
great in the locker room. Doesn't cause any issues, and that's so important. Mike,
he's
I could do this
leader,
forever.
Jordy.
Yep,
that,
yep,
listen,
no doubt.
You can't create that. Either you have that ability or you don't. And he was one of the guys last year when there was a lot of turbulence in the summer with guys leaving, guys getting in trouble. Yeah. And, man, you could kind of feel the earth shake under you a little bit. Yeah. Foster was one of the guys that said, no, this ain't happening. You know, we're going to control what we can control. Whatever happens with someone else, you know, we have no control over that. But we're still a good football team. And he was one of the leaders in that locker room that sort of took control. People say, well, the coach takes control. No, not in the locker room, you don't. That's a player deal. Right. They take control of that. And you being a former athlete, you understand that. You know, it's not the boss. It's basically the guys. They took
That's
over.
Right. That's
and,
right.
And Foster was one of those type people.
Mike, I could do this all day, man. Thank you so much. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the Masters. And I got a phone call from your boy, Charlie Como. What's Charlie want with me? Can you believe that? Your boy.
Oh, that ain't good. Cool. Charlie going to call you.
That's so, trouble.
You don't owe him money or nothing, do you?
No, I do not. I do not.
Okay.
I do not. Take care, Mike. See you
Thank
soon,
you,
buddy. All right. We'll come up and wrap things up.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, finishing touches to this week and this Friday edition of the Jordy Holtberg Show. Let's go straight to our daily history lesson. It was on this day, April 12th, the year 1964. Yes, it's a master theme. Arnold Palmer won his fourth Masters title in 1964. It was the final master for Arnie and his army at Augusta on this day, April 12th, the year 1964. All right, birthday wishes of today. April 12th is your day. Man, happy birthday from all of us at 103.7 The Game and everyone involved under the umbrella of Delta Media. You share with the likes of happy 72nd birthday to Al Bundy. Yes, Mr. Ed O'Neill is 72. I had no idea, but happy 71st birthday. I didn't know David Letterman was 71. And happy 62nd birthday to, from Godfather fame, Andy Garcia. So happy birthday to all of them. LSU baseball tonight, right here on 103.7 The Game from cool Columbia, Missouri. So special thanks to Wilson Alexander for coming on board, for George Becknell, and my producer extraordinaire, Mr. Clint Domain. So, Monday, we'll see if they got the whole Masters tournament in. We'll recap LSU baseball versus Mizzou, ULL baseball versus South Alabama, and the very latest, if there is anything, on the LSU basketball front, and I believe there will be. So, thanks so much for dialing us up all week long. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to all of our partners that make it possible each and every day. Hope you have a great Friday and an even better weekend. So come on back, same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game on Monday. Until then, I'm Jordy Holtberg. Have a great one, and see ya and talk to you soon.